Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. We'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, and our special guest, Mr. Tommy Root. So if you got questions pertaining to anything insurance related, tonight's a great night to be listening and to be and to actually be live calling in. So you can press the number one. That puts you in the call queue and lets us know that you want to participate. So if you got a question or if you got a comment, press number one. We always welcome caller participation. So come and jump on board with us if you already know what you want to talk about, or as the conversation develops and you feel like you got something to ask or something to add, by all means, press number one. There's no such thing as stupid questions. We always welcome more and more insight from different people that may have a different perspective than what we may actually be talking about at the time. So we benefit from the group thought. And with that being said, I'm going to jump right into this week's trend lines report from DAT. We have fuel dropped by 0.7 percentage points. So we are sitting at a national average of diesel right now at $2.89 per gallon. So spring could be coming early to truckload freight. Load counts are holding steady and load-to-truck ratios are showing signs of life for vans, reefers, and flatbeds. Rates are even starting to trend upward, especially in the eastern half of the country. So this is a welcome from all of the things that I've been hearing on spot market. This is a welcoming development. I have been hearing somewhat horror stories from people that are getting slaughtered right now on the spot market. And I hate to hear such things, but we try to provide you with different insights and different tools to try to insulate yourself from the wild pendulum swings that can take place on the spot market. So we're going to look at how the spot market rates were for the previous week, starting out with dry vans, starting out in the northeastern portion of the country. We are showing that the dry van rates coming out of the northeast are showing at $1.65 per mile on the outbound portion of the spot market. On the outbound spot market for dry vans coming out of the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average rate of $1.79. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market rates averaging at $2.04. Coming out of the south central portion of the United States, they're showing an average of $1.68. Also, $1.68 coming out of the West Coast for dry vans for average spot market rates. Jumping over into the outbound spot market flatbed rate, for the previous week, we're showing coming out of the Northeast, $2.07 per mile. Coming out of the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic states, we're showing an average of $2.22 per mile for flatbeds. Moving back up to the Midwest, we show an average of $2.39 for flatbeds. Coming out of the South Central and South, showing an average of $2.08 per mile. And coming out of the West Coast, we're showing average spot market rates for flatbeds at $1.86. And wrapping up, we're going to talk about the reefer rates. Reefer rates showing coming out of the Northeast at $1.90 per mile on average. Coming out of the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic showing on average $1.97. Going back to the Midwest, which seems to always be the trend, leading the nation across all three segment types, outbound spot market rates for reefers are showing at $2.47. Coming out of the south central portion of the United States, we're showing outbound rates at $2.08, and coming out of the West Coast, $2.07 are the outbound spot market rates. And with that being said, we have one other thing to bring you before we bring Chuck and Tommy on. And we're showing that RM Logistics Inc. You may want to, if you have any dealings with R&M Logistics, Inc., you may want to check to make sure that you have proper bond information for those guys. There seems to be something that is going on with their bond. So if you have any dealings whatsoever, you might want to check to make sure that all of your information is correct with R&M Logistics, Inc. With that being said, let me go ahead and bring my co-host up and on board. Let's welcome Chuck Snow to the show. Chuck, how are you this evening?
We're doing well. How are you, Rico?
We are doing great. Had a little bit of a wild weekend. Went out to Vegas for the fight. Big boxing fan here. So boxing is my favorite sport. So I had an opportunity to go out to check out the heavyweight championship of the world out in Las Vegas, and we had a ball out there. We, you know, but I can only probably stay in Vegas for a weekend. Is about all you can take in Vegas.
Yep. I totally get it. 48. I can do 48 hours, and after that, I'll start climbing walls.
any more than that, and you know, as they say, you might come on vacation and leave on probation.
Or what's the other one I've heard? The guy that went to Vegas on a $30 million jet and went home on a $750,000 bus.
Yeah, I started to partake a little bit, but I didn't gamble. I was just there for the festivities. So, but yeah, we had a great weekend. So I'm looking forward to tonight's show. Insurance is definitely, you know, you talk about getting taken to the cleaners. Insurance rates have been skyrocketing for a lot of our listeners and a lot of people in the industry. It's caused a lot of major companies and carriers to kind of reevaluate their systems, and even and for some people, from what I've heard, has caused some of these companies to even shut down because of the insurance rates. So definitely looking forward to bringing Tommy up and on board with us and seeing what he has to say about some of the things that are going on within the insurance, the trucking insurance industry, and how we might be able to navigate some of this stuff to help for a better outcome for our listeners.
Totally agree. Looking forward to it.
So with that being said, I ain't gonna waste any more time. We're gonna go ahead and get Tommy up and on board. Tommy, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine, Rico and Chuck. I appreciate being here and sharing this information with your audience because it is a serious subject. I will take a disagreement with you slightly about taking to the cleaners. It's the same thing as that when you're playing blackjack and you take a draw when you got 20 to try to get 21. It's the cards you're holding that's reacting to, not the insurance rates. Insurance rates are a function of the motor carrier operation. So I just want to point that out. If you look at the ones that are blaming insurance, and I did this because we're really aware of this, and clearly I'm aware of the rates and I'm aware they can't pay for them, but every one of the companies that went down had a bad CSA score, had a bad rating score for the thing. Even more important than the losses they had is that rating score. That's something they can control, and the insurance companies, because that's being used against us in court, is just using that as a benchmark and to write somebody or not, and that's their own road activities because they feel the insured can control that. If they're not controlling that, why do I want to risk my assets with them?
That's a good
point. Okay, so how do we find out what are some things that we need to be, for those of us that may or may not know, you were saying that the ratings and everything, what are some things that, some practical things that we can do to make sure that we are aware of our ratings, first of all, because knowing is half the battle, and if things are not quite in the direction of where they need to be or where you would like for them to be, is there anything that we can do on our end proactively to help get those things more in line?
Rico and Chuck knows this was better than we've talked before, but fortunately I started a foundation this is the eighth year, and that foundation has brought the insurance providers into a marketplace, retail agent, wholesalers, and companies in there, and they listen to that. They have agents who have gone through a learning process and basically setting up in front of me for 40 hours and hear some other people as we do here to understand how to do it right. And our commitment is, if you're going to be involved in this marketplace, you've got to deliver more than the policy, and you've got to help the insured. And if the agent is not willing to do that, then your insurers need to find an agent who's willing to do that. The TRS designation, Transportation Risk Specialist designation, is the ones that these agents have. And they understand trucking. And every one of those agents that are part of this, now some of them are companies, people that have the designation of agent, they can track, and we encourage them to track your insurance scores. I can set up, and we have a program set up, where you can get an email, or I can provide a motor carrier email on their scores on a monthly basis. And when they get close to a alert, meaning within 10 points of an alert, you'll get an email ahead of that so you can take actions now about it. We also can find out which of the vehicles that are causing the problems. Usually that's only about 20% or 20% of the vehicles. And if you give us a PIN number, we can even give you the drivers. And agents who are involved in our program are helping the insured, looking at the pain, looking at who's causing the problem, and taking action there to clean those scores up.
You know, that's a great point because that is some of the stuff we can control by who's driving for us. Sometimes it is, though, it can be lousy luck. You know, you can just have somebody that's in the wrong place, the wrong time, the wrong state. And, you know, with the thing going on right now with the litigation against truckers, we don't have, you know, I'd say we don't have a fair chance in a lot of jurisdictions in the United States.
Chuck, that's absolutely correct, and there's what we call hell holes of litigation. This is where you are, and it's a problem being used. And actually, the reason that the insurance companies react to CSA so bad is exactly that, because the CSA scores are being bought up in court. Every time a mediation is bought up in court, and that is getting more dollars now because the insurance company is afraid, meaning they take the respect. How will a jury or how will react to these bad scores that this insured has? So instead of taking it to court all the way, they make a settlement early enough to get out of it because they're worried about these nuclear verdicts. All these nuclear
right.
verdicts are derivative of somebody violating some regs and rules. And so this reptilian theory that you hear is the reaction. What they're saying is if you have a risk that is not complying with the safety regulations, I don't care what the driver did this day. You need to punish them, jury. You need to make them pay money because they are a predator. They are a problem, and you need to slap their hands or give them a penalty for that. And so these are why the scores are so important. It's not a predictor of crashes. It's being used against us in court. And those
right.
are why the insurance companies act at it. And the second part of it, that is something that the motor carrier can do is try to control that. Chuck, I agree with you that things happen and crashes happen, and we don't know what's happened in those crashes, and we have to pay. That's why you buy coverage. Most of the insurance companies I deal with actually react more unfavorably for a risk with bad CSA scores than having a bad loss, just because the motor carrier might not can control that loss. They can control their scores.
Very, you know, that's a great point. One thing I want to bring up tonight, and there's an awful lot of pressure out there on our listeners, especially the smaller carriers. They're getting insurance raises left and right, and some are deserved, some aren't. Some of it's just market conditions. I haven't heard too many people that have gotten lower rates this year or the year before than they did previously, but there is the odd one. But I think sometimes in this market, when people really have their back up against the wall and they're looking for insurance, they're in survival mode, really. And they may be picking the wrong insurance provider. Can we talk a little bit, and can you just make our listeners understand about the insurance rating? There's different ratings for insurance companies, and I would not want one of our listeners or any of them to end up with insurance from a poorly rated insurance provider that's not going to actually give them coverage in the case, God forbid, they need it.
Chuck, that's a valid point here, and there's a company called AM Best. They are the industry noted ones that do this, and they come into insurance carriers, and they look at their financial worth, they look at their leverage, how much solvency they are, and they look at their practices and the industry they're in, and they give a rating, and that rating is from an A-plus all the way down to a F part of it. Those are ones who have failed.
Ooh.
And most of
okay.
the insurance carriers should look at someone rated either no lower than B plus to A is more for A minus is more preferable, or even A plus more than that, and that's a function of their ability to pay the claims and those things, Chuck. But that would be an important part. There is a situation and the insolvency part, and where you're going to get insolvency is when they come out beyond the standard. One of the ones that went down that everybody was aware of is Risk Retention Group. They're not rated this way. They're not rated the same way. The one that went down on Utah Spirit left a lot of people hung. And in those cases, since there's no guarantee fund, there's nothing behind that, the insured has to defend themselves and pay that. So if it's a market like that, that's not regulated by the Department of Insurance, no guarantee fund behind it, that's where the danger is. And there's some of these markets out here, again, usually in the risk retention group areas, which are not solid behind it. Now, there's some risk retention groups that have been in business a long time. They got good reinsurance. So if you do this, they're not rated. So you got to look at their financial worth, and you got to look at their reinsurance. Because every insurance company, I don't care how big it is, and risk retention groups are smaller, more important than that, they lay off that to a reinsurance facility. And those are big companies, General Star and those companies that write reinsurance, and they reinsure that risk at certain attachment levels, meaning after a claim's $100,000 or $500,000, they step in and pay the rest of it. And so if you have a good reinsurance program, that two things happen. That a reinsurance company is not going to partner with somebody who is not solid, meaning the fronting company, the risk retention group, the people whose names on the policy that they're reinsuring. So they screen those people to make sure they're honest and they pay the claims, but they're also the backup in case the financial worth of the reinsurance company or the assets are spent, then they'll back up and pay the claim. So that's the only caution I have, is look for financial statements and look at how strong the reinsurance companies are and who those reinsurance companies are. Are they A-rated? Are they solid?
So if I'm hearing right, and our listeners are in, they're shopping for insurance, they need to stay away from anybody that's under, let's say, a B+.
Definitely, Chuck, on that part of it. But again, the only ones that have gone down recently is risk retention groups, and they are not standard insurance, and they're overseen by the Department of Insurance of every state, but they don't have guarantee funds. They're not subject to the guarantee funds. They're not subject to the same scrutiny.
Okay, let's just go ahead, Rico.
Well, I was going to ask a question. Like sometimes when you are shopping insurance rates, so to speak. And I've had my agent come back with several different quotes. I may have an opportunity to take a portion of the insurance with one company and another portion of the insurance with another company. And I'm never a big fan of kind of. I'm pretty sure there may be some opportunities to save money there, but just me personally, I just always like having one number to call for in-house everything. Is that a wise way to approach that, or is it not such a bad thing if you have the opportunity to maybe save some money to maybe explore taking on splitting up the coverages or whatever?
Rico, can I say maybe? Let me talk about the two primary practices, okay? The first one, we have a crash. The two areas of insurance that you want with the same carrier is auto liability and general liability, because they work together. When your insurer gets something happening, gets sued, it's either auto liability and general liability. If they're the same insurance carrier, then there's not an argument who's going to pay for it. If they're two separate carriers, there's such a gray area. And the main where this gray area is things like loading and unloading. How far you go. Because when you unload, say, you take a load and you unload a pallet on a pallet jack, and that pallet is a pallet of, boxes from a flat van. Sometimes the drivers will unload that, right, Chuck? Sometimes. Not all
right.
the time, but sometimes
yep.
they would, right? And that pallet jack is the thing you pull down and raise the pallet up and pull out. I'm sure your drivers know that. The difference is if they run into somebody is unloading, meaning one of the customer's employees or one of the front equipment in the employees or in the shipper's, the consignee's yard or the shipper's yard, if they run into on the dock. If it is a pallet jack that has to be pulled by hand, that would be an auto liability for that damage they've done. If there's a pallet jack with an engine on it, it would be a general liability exposure doing the same operation. And that's the kind of gray area when you're unloading fuel. When is it completed, unloaded? When you're unloading horses, it's all out of liability until you get to the barn because you're unloading it by hand. So anybody other than the drop and hook that's involved in loading, unloading, there's a major area where coverage, the two policies are designed to work together, auto liability and general liability, to address those exposures. So that's the coverage you want to have with the same insurance carrier whenever possible. The second one you have, Rico, is you are correct in the point that the better I have been performed with that insurance company, they're well to stay with me. So if I have a good loss ratio in physical damage, a good loss ratio in cargo, my liability might be just a little iffy. They're willing to ride it out because they're making money overall. So in the cases of auto liability and physical damage, that would be very positive to keep together. And I would like to keep cargo together. Particularly, there's things that can happen in physical damage when you have the cargo and with the same carriers of physical damage. A lot of carriers will ride a combined deductible or a basket deductible.
Right.
When a
basket
crash
deductible,
happens,
yeah.
Only right, when a crash happens, only one deductible apply, not three. And that's a major advantage. The only area that I would be cautious about that is cargo now is so specialized. There's more exposure in cargo that's uncovered than any other line of insurance that you would buy. And depending on what you haul, not all physical damage carriers have good cargo forms. So I would look at the cargo form first, and are they covering everything my exposure are? Meaning that if you're hauling fruit goods, you've got to be worried about the spoilage exclusion. If you're hauling open bed operation, flatbed, you will have to worry about the temperature change. So there's things you have to worry about. Drop and hook, you have to worry about the triggering of coverage because some of them say it's in your care, customer control. Well, you know, in a drop and hook situation, your insurers are going to assume liability for it even before they ever touch it or hook onto it. So those are things you got to look at in cargo. But whenever possible, I'm saying you're better off keeping it all together because the insurance companies look at the aggregate premium and the losses and will tolerate a bad loss in one of the areas if the other part of the areas are making difference. However, in that scenario, cargo is one thing that I would make sure I got the best cargo policy, whether it's with that company or another company.
Tommy, one of the things that's going on in our industry right now, there's a real push, which I totally understand, for drop and hook situations. Companies like Amazon and Convoy and a whole bunch of other ones have entered into that arena, power only. What happens in the case where a carrier goes and he picks up a trailer at a shipper's yard and it's sealed so the carrier doesn't get the chance to inspect the load to see how it's loaded, which personally, you know, from my truck driving days to this day, if I get into a truck, I do want to see how it's loaded. I want to see what I'm hauling and how, you know, are there straps or are there bars at the back? What's protecting it? But in these cases, you have a deserted freight yard with maybe a security guard or they've given you a gate code, and you go in, you hook up to a trailer. It says on the bills that you've got a load of empty water bottles or you've got a load of wool shirts or whatever, but you can't make sure you do because you can't break the seal. What happens when there's something happens and you've gone to deliver and there's a discrepancy? What happens with insurance in that case?
Well, this is driver training, Chuck, and the recommendation on this strongly, and I teach this in class, on that receipt, because every time the driver has to find a receipt, they need to put on that receipt, shipper loading count, SOL,
right.
SLO, shipper, SLC, shipper loading count. And what that says is I didn't verify it, I didn't load it, I don't know what's there, and then put the seal number on that receipt and keep a copy of the receipt. And then when they get to the other location, take patience, take time to find someone who signs off on it that is received still sealed. That's our defense. because what you're using in the Carmack amendments involved in cargo, the shipper has to prove what was in there, and if the driver does not make that note, Chuck, you're exactly right. They're going to say, well, they received it or they signed for it, so therefore it must have been there. So it's got to be
right.
noted on the receipt that the driver signs to put shipper, load, and count. In other words, I didn't count it. I don't know what's in there. And all I know is that the shipper loaded it, and it was sealed with a seal number. And when I got to the other end, that seal was still on it with that seal number on it.
Exactly. I just want listeners to know this because there seems to be some problems out there in the industry, especially with the amount of drop and hook going on all over
right.
the United States and Canada now.
Well, Chuck, and the problem here, and I'm a type A personality, as you well know, they have to be patient enough to go do that. They got to
right.
take that extra step. And this is because they got to put themselves on the other end. And, you know, I'm the one that I don't walk around rental cars to see if anything's damaged. I mean, that's dumb on my part. But a rental car damage is totally different than a load being responsible
right.
for this. So
exactly.
they've got to be patient enough to make sure to do that. And they've got to be trained and know enough to do what we just said, Chuck. And this is a part here, training. Just like now with food goods. They've got to keep a
right.
a thermometer with them, and before they load those commodities, they've got to stick that shrimp rag wrapped deal to make sure what temperature they're loading on it is the temperature they got to keep it at. Because if they don't do that, then later if the temperature is a different temperature and the mechanical unit didn't break down, they might not have any coverage, and it might be because the load was loaded hot that they didn't verify that. So once they sign the receipt for it, then they take it in that condition, and if they don't know what the temperature is on it, then they're going to end up buying that or have that load rejected. This is where the driver needs to be trained.
100%. You know, we've talked about it on the show a while ago. We haven't mentioned it in a while, and our listeners should know this, especially ones that are interested in hauling produce. Just about every produce shed in the United States will have some bad produce on in the shed, and some unscrupulous operators of these sheds will purposely watch out for people that aren't checking temperature. And the second you're not checking temperature of the product that they're putting on, they go, put bad stuff on that guy. He's not watching. And they'll get rid of
and
their bad stuff on your truck.
And then they get rejected at the other end, and none with the Food Modernization Act, if the other end rejects it, that then there's no salvage. It becomes a total loss unless somebody then signs off on it. And, Chuck, a lot of this stuff is even here is market-driven. My father, who you knew well, used to have a situation where he would not haul watermelons because watermelons were not worth the same on July the 4th, 5th, as it were on July the 3rd. So they would tend to get rejected on the 5th if for some reason they're not there. He learned early on that, and that was the way he dealt with what you're talking about right now in that part of it here. And then you argue about today you even have worse than that. Today is because today you couldn't salvage it. At least in those days, he was able to go salvage them. And, you know, and I had a fruit stand on the corner one time. We took a load of them down here, so I sold them on the corner to salvage them at one time. But you can't do that anymore. More. And so that's so important for them to verify this stuff, Chuck. And again, it's the patience and the training.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it is much more important now, especially when there is no salvage with the new laws. You know, and you can't afford a loss like that.
No. No.
Now, what do you see in the insurance market? Are you seeing anything let up at all, or are we still facing a storm as an industry?
I think the hurricane's over. A lot of the hurricane or problems started because of claims happened 3 or 4 years ago, and they were underestimated at the final results. Because what an insurance company does when they get a claim, they look at those facts and they say, we've had these similar facts before, and this claim in the future, meaning when it gets settled 3-4 years down the line, will cost us X dollars. Well, when you think about what's happened in the last 4 years with verdicts, with the nuclear verdicts, the losses have gone up 40% to 50% just because of the nuclear verdicts and CSA scores. So those past claims were undervaluated. Now with the new valuation and the history here, they're better evaluating. So a part of what we're making up is not what we're doing this year, it's what was done 3 years ago to try to make those things up. And that right. that made up. And but you still need 3% to 5% even for good risk. The two things that, bother me in this part of it, and it's the first time in the industry I've ever seen that, the gap between a good motor carrier with a good CSA score and a good loss record and a marginal motor carrier, one alert, two alerts, maybe a loss ratio of 50%, that spread has grown greatly. Before the, all this happened, Chuck, there may be 10 to 15% difference between a good risk and a marginal risk. Today it's 30% and 40% difference between a good risk and a marginal risk. So unless everything's clean, CSA scores, driver retention, claims, that's where it's that's the gap that's happening today.
Interesting. And you know, I think it's probably going to continue until the till things level out and until the insurance companies can start seeing profit again. Then, of course, what I'm going to guess happens is companies that got out of it will start getting back into insuring large trucks.
Chuck, that is thing, and for the first time, I know of three new markets who are coming back in the market. And this is the first time, and there's a fourth as an offshoot of another market that, is riding it. But shoot, and this is the first time I've seen new programs in the marketplace in the last 3 or 4 years. So, there is some of that now.
We've watched them just diminish. Go ahead, Rico.
I've got a question, maybe a little bit of controversial, but I want to see, Tommy, if you could maybe peer into a little bit of a crystal ball and just maybe give some insight on this part. As far as older trucks, you got more people that are going out maybe buying older trucks that are, that don't have to have the ELDs or the old mechanical. You're seeing some people are seeing a resurgence in some of the mechanical engines, getting away from maybe trying to avoid intentionally, maybe trying to avoid the ELD mandate, or and so for some people, let's just be honest about the whole situation. The whole EPA engines with the DPFs and all that stuff have never been really that reliable and have been notorious money pits. And some people just want to avoid that altogether. But is there maybe a push to maybe by older trucks maybe be becoming uninsurable at some point, or is that something that that someone may have in their mind of going out buying glider kits or whatever? And is that something that, you know, maybe they might want to be mindful of, to maybe getting caught in a crossfire of not being able to get that vehicle insured?
Rico, let me ask you this question, and let's divide it up. I understand the mechanical engine. I used to sell a national office truck. I understand when they came out was for front ends, and we had to do some major repairs because they screwed up, and we even had to pay some downtime. So understand the mechanical part of it. Can we put that aside for a second? And let's talk about buying the truck with an engine that's 1999 or older that doesn't have the EMC in it that tracks into the ELDs, electrical log devices. Why are they not wanting electrical log devices? Tell me, Rico, why they don't want it?
Well, you got a lot of people that, from the standpoint of they don't want Big Brother. The main argument that I'm hearing from people is they don't want Big Brother always knowing everything that they're doing. That's been the number one thing. Of course, you've got your people that are going to be that are trying to game the system and trying to continue, you know, whether it be running illegally or whatever else. I'm sure that may play some of the role into it as well. But the number one thing that I hear is that they don't want the government, they are leery of the government intrusion.
Well, there's no government intrusion because the government doesn't have access to those information. The individual motor carrier has access to information. It's just another way enforcing the law. The hours of service laws are exactly the same. In fact, they're a little more lenient now with some personal conveyance because of this tracking everything miles. And Rico, I'd like to challenge you that's their main problem. They don't want. They've been pushing the envelope. They used to fudge the logs. Those things. That's just why they don't want it, because the electronic logs track exactly what paper logs should have tracked. The GPS mm-hmm. in it, the use of it, the government doesn't get access to that. The motor carriers do that, and I'll talk to a second about this in a minute. And so it's just now the more accurate enforcement of the logs. The other thing is, how many miles per gallon do those oil engines make? 4 or 5 miles to a gallon? What's a new engine getting? 9 miles to a gallon? They can't make that difference up. Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, you know what? I agree with Rico halfway in as far as the reliability of the old engines. I think that anybody that is buying an old truck just to skirt the law, I think they're a fool. And I will say this on air. Just remind some of the listeners, if you're operating one of those old trucks and you're using paper logs and you're doing that just so you can cheat, and they catch you doing things the way we used to in the old days, and somebody gets hurt or killed, you're going to jail. And your insurance, just a reminder, and tell me if I'm wrong, the insurance company, if you break the law and you get charged on motor manslaughter or one of these things, there's no insurance policy in the world that's going to cover you. You're on your own to hire criminal lawyers, which costs an awful lot of money, so I believe, to keep your behind out of jail. Am I correct on that?
Well, yes, in most cases. Sometimes we do hire a lawyer to defend a liability case, but if it's clearly that negligent, like you talk about, yeah, they're going to have a criminal lawyer in that part of it. Chuck, that's why I wanted to divide it up, because I agree with you. If it's for the mechanical stuff that Rico was talking about, I understand that. In fact, when I was in the Howard dealership, I actually sold Geiger kits to Halliburton because they wanted to build their own truck. You know, put their own engine in it, their own components
right.
in it, instead of international. So I understand that part of it, but that's clearly what's got to be shown to the insurance company. But you start with the idea they're using the older trucks, the glider kits, to avoid the ELDs, don't they? But I will say this, Chuck, all indications are in 5 years and maybe less, most of the insurance we're going to write is going to be rated based on, or the premium is going to be based on, the information in electronic log devices. This is where it's going. Where you're going,
oh, yeah.
How many
Definitely.
Miles you travel. This is where
yep.
it's going to go. And so you're if you don't get to it now and start controlling it now, Chuck, you're behind the curve. You know,
and
that's the problem.
You're right. Our insurance company for years, and I would say for well over 20 years up here in Canada, they look at our IFTA. And they see where we travel. And I remember years ago when we used to run a lot of California, I was with, at the time, I think I was with Markel still, and they said that I could only have one truck at a time in the state of California because the liability was so severe in that state. And then I know now they still look at our IFTA scores, and I know that if you run into certain jurisdictions like Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Florida, especially South Florida, which I want to say something on air. I was down in South Florida this weekend. We drove down, and in my life, and I've been driving legally since 1969 when I got my license at 16 and started driving small trucks then. In my entire life, I have never seen insanity behind steering wheels like what I saw in Dade and Broward counties. I just could not. I'm not exaggerating. I have never seen anything like it. Sunday afternoon, cars are doing 70, 75 miles an hour, and you get, and I'm not, there had to be 10, no more than that, 15, 20% of them were doing in excess of 100, well over 100 miles an hour. Like, it just craziness. People going through red lights. I could not believe. I guess they don't have enforcement for traffic in those two counties, because I had never seen insanity like this anywhere in my life.
Chuck, I totally agree with you that driving habit, and that is the problem. The other problem with South Florida is the judiciary. It's a real hellhole, and for the policy demand limits and things like that, that's where you have a problem with those areas. But getting back to the electronic logs and the paper logs, they always base it on IFTAs. The only difference in IFTAs with electronic logs versus paper logs, instead of the paper logs, most of them, as you know, were done by a zip code, where the electronic logs give the actual miles part. And so they're more accurate. In fact, they're more accurate IFTAs required actual miles, but they never enforced it. They never could police it part here. I have a court case that was in Fort Lauderdale. I was in Orlando, where a couple of motorcycles got hurt, killed by a trucker. And one of the things they said is paper logs for comic books because everybody cheated on them. That was in the court filings. That was in the plea. And they gave, you know, $5.2 million in that case. And the only thing they violate is hours of service violation using paper logs. That, at least that's all that the newspaper reported that happened to that part of it. So that's, you're right, it's going to be against that. But what you're going to do is you're going to sign on to an insurance company, and you're going to give the insurance company access to your electronic log devices, and you're going to pay a premium based on per mile and based on where you're going. And then you'll get a monthly bill based on those two factors. That's where that's what we're going to end up, in my opinion, in the very future.
And you know what? I think that's actually, I think that's fair, because risk versus, you know, risk and reward. I think that if you're going into those areas that are extremely dangerous and vulnerable for crashes and vulnerable for ridiculous settlements, I think you should have to pay more, and I think the customer should have to pay more.
I agree.
It's only fair.
Right, because you got now where I start in South Florida and go out of the state versus start in North Carolina and go into Florida. Right now, because of IFTAs, they can't divide that up, but now they can with the electronic log devices. In fact,
right.
A few insurance companies are starting to use that today.
I think it's a great idea, and I think that in the end we're all bellyaching about it now, but I think that the insurance companies working with the trucking companies. The good trucking companies, I think that we have to look at our insurance company as our partner and not as the enemy. Although, you know, there's been certainly, if you have, you know, if you're practicing bad behavior, they will become your enemy very quickly. That's why you need to work with your insurance company.
Well, Chuck, another thing is today, with the information federal website, with the information with CSA, with the inspections, you can't hide anything today. It's all transparent. So if you try to hide it, it's going to end up biting you in the thing. Even starting a new company and getting rid of an old company, the Chameleon Carrier, because of scores. You can't do that today because that's a death toll, because every insurance company is going to find out about it, and it just doesn't work today. So the best thing, as you just said, and to summarize what Rico asked earlier, is to find an agent who understands that, because that agent is your messenger. Who is listening to us, trucker? That agent is the one that's going to have to take your story and tell it to the insurance company who's willing to accept that risk or to write that risk at a favorable price. And that's an agent who understands the business, understands what we're talking about today. If your agent doesn't understand what we're talking about today, you've got the wrong agent. It's just that point.
Totally,
because they got to paint that picture.
I totally agree. And one thing our listeners need to understand, the ones that are new to having their own authority, be very careful when you're shopping agents, because what happens is there's a real limited market to the insurance companies. You don't want to pit agent against agent, because first of all, once an agent goes to an insurance company on your behalf, the rest of the agents are blocked out. We could all take a lesson from the insurance companies. They do a good job at this. If you have a good agent, work with him or her. I know that we have dealt with the same agent. Basically, our story is we started with an agent and a broker, and the person we were dealing with, the salesperson, he ended up taking our business to about four other agencies through almost a 30-year period, but a 25-year period. We are still with He took us to one finally where we're very comfortable. He's left the insurance business, and we're very comfortable with the people we're dealing with. And we, you know, we get calls every year. Do you want to switch? We can do, you know, we can do this, we can do that. And I always say to them, listen, if you've got somebody that you represent that my current insurance broker doesn't, we'll certainly take a look. But I'm not switching agents because I have a great agent and I've got a great relationship with them.
And what you're saying is the same thing for a reason. Bad claims handling, not getting certificates out, could be. But ones that provide all those services and the extra stuff we talked about earlier with RICO about adding those extra services, helping with the scores and that kind of stuff, those are the ones you have to. They're your messenger to take it to the companies. And if they don't have the relationship with the companies and can't find the right company, then you got the wrong agent, Chuck, and I totally agree
right.
with that part of it. But you also mentioned something that RICO talked about, and that's because of the advantage of keeping it all with the same insurance carrier and the same agent. You now have a history there, and you can leverage that to a certain degree. Now, you can't completely leverage it because sooner or later there could be a conflict, but the more valuable you are to the agent, and the more valuable you are to the company, the more tolerance that agent has, that company has, when some blips happen, some oops happen. And, Chuck, I came up with thinking today, and Rico, I don't know. I just was riding down the highway the other day, and I saw one of these tractors with the spokes coming out of the wheels on the steering axle that looks like the Ben-Hur
right.
spokes. That's kind of,
right.
I mean, why do they do that? That's going to show up in court. I mean,
yep.
you know. And you see skull and crossbones on the front of the thing, or jaws, or those things.
Right.
You just can't have that. That's going to show up in court. You don't need to
right.
dial it back. Take that ego off. The other thing we'll do, and at the conference this year, is also extremely important. Your smaller motor carriers, Rico, can't do this, and Chuck, but the big ones can. And you and I talked about this earlier today. You got to separate your businesses. You got to have your property in a family trust. You got to have your brokerage separated from your transportation company. In fact, if you want to really isolate yourself from having a bad verdict against you, you need to even isolate the ownership of the trucks in a separate leasing company done properly there. So when the plaintiff's attorneys end up and you have a horrendous crash, that plaintiff's attorney is going to make a choice somewhere whether to accept the policy limits offered or to try to get a judgment against you, against the motor carrier over and above their policy limits. And when that happens, the problem you have, can they collect that judgment? And if there's no assets there to collect, then they'll accept the policy limits, and then your insurer can go on and stay in business, that part of it. If they don't do that, then you might have a situation where they're going to lose their property or lose their whole operation, Chuck. So it's very important now to pay mind to the businesses and have separate business, completely separate. Separate checking accounts, separate management, everything possible to isolate their assets so that they're not all exposed on that $80,000 missile running down the highway that everybody likes to insure or likes to sue.
Yeah, I want to add one thing to that. Today in courts, they can go after directors. They never used to be able to pierce the corporate veil. It can happen. It doesn't happen very often, but it can. It's not a bad idea. An old timer told me this years ago, bad idea sometimes to have a mortgage on your house, even when it's paid for, and take that money and go buy another one or invest it. It may protect you one day.
Chuck, that and D&O is a situation you and I talked about that earlier, and there's some exposure there if you choose the wrong situation and don't do something and you get sued personally, and there could be some liability there that would protect those kind of people. But you want to keep the business. And anybody who's listening to us, Rico, who's not incorporated or an LLC, they got to stop the truck right now and go do it. I mean, that's the dumbest thing, still operating as individual.
100%. Move that truck until
the whole assets are exposed in those things. And
forever.
And,
it's not even today.
Right.
They can get judgment against you so that anything you ever earn for the rest of your life, if you're 21 years old, you know, there's a very good chance you're going to live for another 80 years. You may be paying off something for 80 years. So even though they can pierce the corporate veil if something happens, still the cheapest insurance you'll ever get is incorporating. Although it's not foolproof, it's a start. and then you buy your insurance from a good insurance company after that. But that's your start, is having a corporation.
And Chuck, really, when they pierce the corporate veil, it's because they don't treat it as a separate entity, meaning that they
right.
take money in personally or take money out personally without accounting for everything. It's where they don't respect that it is a separate legal entity and keep the operations separate, separate bank accounts, separate billing, and that kind of stuff. Then you can isolate yourself and maybe not pierce the corporate veil if you have things like that.
See, I think people kid themselves. And they think they can get away with stuff, but what happens is when you have litigation from some of these big ambulance chasers that we have out there trying to take us down, these guys are relentless, and they do this. They, you know, they're suing big companies like Swift and Hunt and Werner and all the other guys. So they've had lots of practice, and they go against a smaller carrier, and that, and I've heard stories from small carriers that have been involved in litigation with crashes. And the stuff that they have access to, you have nothing hidden except maybe the money you have in your pocket, not even the money under your bed, under the mattress. So there's no hiding anything. So you have to – don't kid yourself. These people have big teeth.
And, Chuck, the other thing is, you know – think about it if you're a plaintiff's attorney. Why is a trucking company so easy to pick on? The reason why is you know they have at least $750 and probably a million. You know that they've done something wrong, and you know that the jury hates trucking companies because everyone's been scared. This is why they're easy picking.
You know, 100%. And that's why lawyers put up these billboards all over the United States from coast to coast. 1-800-SUE-A-TRUCKER. Have you been hit by a truck?
Right. And so, you know, the insurance companies – go ahead. I'm sorry, Rico.
No. Well, I was just trying to make sure that, you know, we kind of got off a little bit, but I was just trying to make sure as far as when it came to the older trucks, are they going to be uninsurable? What do you think on the lines of those vehicles?
There's more pressure for uninsurability for physical damage than there are cargo. And there are liability. The liability would be more of a function of the quality of the truck, inspection, those kind of things. The physical damage would be a tough part of it because of having to determine it's so old and the parts and things like that, Rico. But there is a mentality, and the question you came earlier is why. And if the underwriter gets an opinion just to avoid the electronic logs, then that is an unfavorable situation, and most underwriters will react negative to that. If it's because I've owned the truck for a long time or I know this engine's good, I have a truck here, if that story is told, then there's less resistance in auto liability for that. There is more resistance, more problems in physical damage.
Got it.
Yeah. You know, and some of those old trucks are worth a lot of money. There was a truck in here yesterday that I used on my Instagram post for this very show. It was in my warehouse unloading from a Conestoga wagon, and it was a 2002 Peterbilt, and that truck was, you know, it was a show truck. I bet you that truck was worth $250,000. You know, you could eat off the fenders. You know, and the driver was a total pro.
How about a B61 Mac, the old B61 Macs that had been refurbished and stuff like that? And, you know,
actually, I had one of those trucks. It was a great truck.
Yeah, Doc Coggins gave my father trucks. That was his equity to become a part of my father's trucking company. He gave him 61 Macs. That was his equity buying it. But that's a long story and a long days, too. But my point here, Chuck, some of those trucks are worth a lot because they take care of it. And that's,
right.
Rico, that's what's got to be shown to the underwriter, that pride that Chuck just said, and you need to include it with the picture. And in those cases, the underwriters would not have a problem for liability. Again, a little bit for physical damage, you can understand that, because now how are you going to replace it? You follow that part of it.
Pretty expensive to replace
it. I got you.
You know, it's when you have those old trucks that aren't fixed up, and the paint is peeling and everything else, if the insurance company sees those, then they're just going to shake their head and they're going to go, this is a bad operator. I don't want any part of, you know, I don't want to bet on this guy. Really, that's what we're talking about. Insurance companies are gamblers, and they're placing a bet on your ability to be a good operator.
Now, let me throw another wrinkle in there, okay? You're a DOT officer sitting down the highway. Would you tend to have attention to these older trucks? And if so, would you tend to look at them more scrutiny, and would you tend to inspect those trucks more often?
Well, I'll tell you what. If it's one of those ones that's all it's all clean and it looks like that driver takes really good care of it, I'm not even going to bother looking at it because I know that truck is good because that person takes pride in their truck. If it's one of those ones where the paint is fading and you can see this thing is in bad need of repair, it's coming in for a full inspection.
Well, and even more of that, take one halfway. It looks is clean and all, but it's an older truck. Don't you think those officers know in a lot of cases that those trucks are trying to avoid electronic logs? There. Chuck, let me Rico, you mentioned glider kits. The problem with glider kits is that, and this is the physical damage problem with glider kits, the glider kit carries a new title, yet it's got old components in it. So it's hard to then evaluate what that truck's worth. That's the other problem with physical damage with glider kits.
Yeah, it gets pretty hard to.
Got it.
Find out exactly what
I'm looking at. I'm looking at the time, and time has flown by. We got a caller that has their hand raised that wants to get in and maybe add something to the conversation. So let's do that before we get out of here. Caller calling in from the 704 area code. What's your name and how can we help?
Oh, hey, it's Jim Bauman from Charlotte. And Chuck, I called maybe a few weeks ago and haven't, you know, I've been too busy to call the last couple times, but I was listening to your show today.
Wonderful.
And
thank you.
The one thing I would have a question for your guest is I haven't heard credit score come up, and I wonder how, if and how much that affects someone's insurance rate, you know, if that's a predictor of things. Like the banks use it for a lot, is it used in the insurance business?
To answer that
question
is absolutely for a smaller motor carrier. And the credit score does, unlike the banks, the credit scores and most carriers have got a direct relationship to good credit scores, meaning they're managing their business. They understand their business. They are responsible parties. That's what it shows. And clearly, a number of the insurance companies you're riding, smaller motor carriers, use that as a litmus test, and the premium will be based on the credit score of the individual driver. By the way, you're in Charlotte?
Exactly.
Well, we're going to have a contract class in Charlotte at the Embassy Suite by the airport on August 18th with Rob Moses and myself talk about the contracts you signed and what the insurance ramifications are of those contracts. We just are putting the final touches on it today, but that will be a good session that would be worth your while to come by and see. By the way, do you know where Clinton is? North Carolina?
Yes. Yeah, I sure do.
That's where I was born. And I'm a Wake Forest graduate, so I got some Tar Heels on you, okay?
Gotcha.
And my father hauled pickles out of Mount Holly, Mount Olive Pickle Company, okay?
Mount Olive. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's
right. So we've got, but you might want to look at that, Chuck. That's something we're just rolling out. That should be a good session. We hope motor carriers will come to learn more about the contracts they sign and what the insurance ramifications are of those contracts to make sure how they're insured. So Rob and I are going to do that program in Charlotte on August the 18th.
Oh, wonderful.
That's
okay,
excellent.
Well, we're
going to
talk more
about appreciate
that
the call,
we get closer.
We appreciate the call, Jim. We going to get ready to try to wrap up and put a bow on this one. Tommy, if you would like to tell the good people how they can get a hold of you in the future.
What they want is a website, mcief.org, Motor Carriers Insurance Education Foundation.org, O-R-G. That's our website. We welcome truckers there. We welcome truckers to be a part of our program. Chuck, we just got our first trucker that got the TRS designation, one of the loss prevention people in the trucking company. And this has led them to be a better insurance provider. Our whole purpose is to make it easier for insurance companies to buy insurance. Chuck's been in our program. Chuck, you know we're achieving that objective. I think you agree with me there. And
100%.
That's the whole, we have nothing to sell.
Yep.
we have nothing to sell but knowledge and
yeah.
help.
And you certainly,
and so that's
you
what
certainly
we're doing.
Provide that. Do a great job.
Great, great. Well, Tommy, we want to thank you again for taking time out of your schedule to join us here on the Racing Lanes podcast. Chuck, go ahead and let people know how they can get a hold of you, and we will put a bow on this one for tonight.
Okay, you can call me at 800-388-4352. My extension here is 2. That's really important. Or send me an email, chuck@traffics, T-R-A-F-F-I-X. Or you can catch me on Instagram, Chuck Snow CEO. Send me a private message.
Sounds great. Well, we want to thank Tommy once again for taking time out of his schedule to join us and come on to the show. Definitely want to thank the biggest thing goes out to you guys, the listeners, for tuning in, downloading, replaying the show. We definitely appreciate you guys. Tell a friend to tell a friend to check us out every Tuesday at 7 p.m. We try to bring you guys the absolute best as far as guests that we try to make sure we seek out the best guests to bring to you to help inform you, to help you put more tools in your toolbox. And tonight I think that we were fed well tonight. So we want to, you know, just can't thank Tommy enough for taking time out of his schedule. And we'll see you guys same place, same time next week, God willing. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and we'll talk to you the next time. God bless you and good night.
Catch you on the flip-flop.